All my life I've been told that art is revolutionary, but I still don't know what this means. I can see how it comforts, how generously it distracts. But no novel has convinced a billionaire to pay their taxes.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio. I'm Lauren Korn. Speaking with Kelly Sherman about her newest book, The New World, and about her creative practices. A hybrid collection of poetry and prose, The New World follows Sherman's attempts, failures, and reattempts at understanding and articulating an era of immense social upheaval, political corruption, and environmental consequence, as well as her place as an artist within it. Kelly, welcome to The Right Question.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your new book is called The New World, and in it you write of newness as in new objects of consumption, you know, in late capitalism, newness as in discovery, newness as in recent, as in the news. My first question to you then is, what's new? What's new with you, Kelly?
What's new? One new thing that I've been navigating this past year is discovering that my hobby of making pottery has become like a small business without my knowing it. So I feel very happy about that. And also, like, picture Charlie Chaplin film reel of like a poet trying to like figure out the right type of business license application to fill out and things of that nature. But it's funny, I know that the past year has been so difficult and has presented a lot of challenges for the entire world. And I've certainly been feeling a lot of those and also feeling like a lot was burned away from kind of like my thoughtscape that I needed to be, especially coming out of the last 5 years, which I feel like a lot of the new world is kind of poking around that territory of inundation and feeling like I really wanted above anything else to find like a quiet place where I could just have thoughts that I knew were my own. So I guess the concept of newness for me, it was a lot of things. Part of it was moving to a new place in a way to escape a lot of the inundation that I was sort of feeling from, you know, just like the accumulated weight of life in a certain location. But also this sense of newness, especially like as it manifests in a capitalist industrial economy of just like always coming, like always a new wave of products, always a season to attach a new wave of products to, always new information in scare quotes, or news or events. And it really, to me, had this quality of like waves breaking on a shore, which had a lot to do with the fact also that we like connected in my mind to the fact that we lived near a beach and sort of living with that cyclical, natural regenerative newness of the earth, but then also experiencing sort of the facsimile of that in the way that we consume information. And it doesn't stop. Like, it just keeps happening and keeps becoming something different, keeps morphing. And so everything feels new. I mean, even just coming out of the pandemic on the other side, like, every day to me feels like the challenge of developing a new system of getting through the day or like planning for the next months or thinking about art projects in the future or any of that stuff. In a lot of ways, I feel like the slate is clean. So I think now that I'm on summer vacation, a lot of my writing prompts are going to be just like, what do you want to do with this space, you know?
It seems so timely, the new this book. But there's no way you could have anticipated it. How long did it take you to write The New World? When did it start? What was its inception? And how has your relationship to it changed in light of this pandemic?
Yeah, it was so uncanny and weird to be editing this book during the pandemic. It's called The New World, no pressure. I think I started, so my first book, Popular Music, came out in like the spring of 2016. And I almost immediately, well, that fall, definitely, my partner Jay and I moved from Portland, where we'd been for a long time, to this spot in Northern California. And I think of it in a lot of ways as being a landing spot that we needed to just be in to sort of crash, to get out of the city and finally try to break clean from a place that we've been trying to break from for a while. And then, of course, the election happened. And it felt like, or I felt like, this overwhelming urge to document and describe what was happening and try to articulate it through writing. And whether that was like on social media or just in journals and thinking about, you know, next books or collections of poems about what was going on. So I let myself do that, but at the same time, I was sort of thinking about how not helpful that was to the overall political situation, you know? And just that paradox of being a creative person and having your impulse be to try to make meaning or interpret or articulate or find beauty in something unfolding and happening. But then I also felt this disappointment in that and feeling like maybe I should, instead of writing poems, be working at a soup kitchen, you know? And so anyway, that was a lot of the foundational ways of thinking that started building the book, is those kind of dual impulses to create, but also to be aware that that creation might be self-serving or just to calm myself down. I think a lot of the work for the first round was really reacting to the conditions of the world and how it was constantly changing. And then as I sort of passed through again or started building it up, and as the different sections started taking shape, I sort of coalesced around this idea of the new world and all the things that I just said, of this kind of relentlessness, ever arriving information, products, all sort of being offered as a way of escaping a reality. And I thought that that was really interesting and something worth approaching from a few different angles. And so my publisher, Black Ocean, called and said, yeah, let's do it. Let's publish this book and have the edits done for me in a few months. And so I started working on it again, like passing through as the pandemic was like arriving and taking root and sort of making itself felt and known, and actively changing everything about the world that we live in. And so it was such an interesting event to have happen as the book was becoming finalized, because it really made me have to go through the entire manuscript and just think about what kind of ideas and emotions would make it through to the other side of that and still be relevant.
How could you even know that?
I don't know. And I will say that when my publisher called me, it was January 5th, I looked up the date in this really cool book called The Secret Language of Birthdays. Have you ever heard of it?
I haven't, no.
Okay, it's like a strangely prescient, huge volume where every day of the year has a characteristic. So it's like a day of something. And January 5th, I looked it up as soon as he called me, is the day of tender recovery. And I was like, tender recovery. And I that made me realize that, like, I had so much, I think, anger and outrage, like all of us had, over the experience of living through a really just terrible administration and, like, political time in this country. And a lot of that anger, I think, was, like, in this book. Even just thinking of the book as being more about offering a vision of something that could facilitate recovery or tenderness helped me so much in clarifying, like, the tone of how I even wanted to present a lot of the challenges of that time. So
that makes so much sense,
right?
To me. Yeah. As one of your readers, that makes a lot of sense. That tone comes through, and that sense of tenderness, even. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I want to go back to this idea that you spoke of about, and I'm just going to state the title of this section, Art During Wartime.
Yeah.
It is the first section of this book. And you actually spoke with Sarah Aronson, a previous host of The Right Question, not too long ago, a couple of years ago, maybe at this point, maybe a year and a half or so, about popular music. And in that conversation with Sarah, you said, it is difficult to be an artist in America. And that is such a foreshadowing of the new world, right? I'm hoping you might read the last paragraphs on page 15 and 16 of Art During Wartime.
I would love to. How do you make art in a country that's always at war? Maybe this was my real question. Picasso painted such beautiful doves, and still we send human beings into the desert to blow up buildings. All my life I've been told that art is revolutionary, but I still don't know what this means. I can see how it comforts, how generously it distracts. But no novel has convinced a billionaire to pay their taxes. No poem has persuaded our president to end a war. I do admire the impulse to add beauty to the world, or to offer some respite to others as they navigate the specific difficulty of being alive. When I feel helpless or stuck, words and songs are what move me forward. But I wonder at the function of art in an age of empire, when it might be more useful to hold the gaze of our reflection a little longer. What would it look like to confront the reality and pain of the aggressive displacement, for example, instead of escaping into the momentary distraction of paint?
You spoke to the idea that the new world was, in its editing stages, kind of a response or a movement towards what you called a tender recovery. But I want to talk more about your impulses. I want to know about your ability or this impulse to create art, your body's capacity and need for production, whether it be poetry or, as you've talked about, ceramics, pottery. Tell me about those impulses.
In thinking about that, I realized that I actually returned to pottery right after popular music came out, because I had such an overwhelming urge to make a physical object. Like, as a writer, I feel like so much of that infrastructure building happens entirely in the mind. And all I wanted to do was, like, turn that off and make a cup that someone could use, that I could drink out of almost instantly. And the simplicity of that is so appealing to me that I feel like it makes a really good counterweight, I guess, to writing and doing the kind of intellectual sculpting of working with ideas and concepts. I've always kind of been a person who I've been lucky enough to be able to follow or, like, listen to the impulses that I might have creatively. And so I work in a lot of different mediums, like, feel drawn to writing sometimes, feel drawn to pottery other times, play music. And for a long time, I actually felt self-conscious about sort of moving between all of those things, because if you're, I mean, I think that this, our culture really pushes specialization and sort of casts doubt on the legitimacy of an artist who works in a variety of mediums. So for a long time, I just thought, oh, maybe I just don't have the stamina or focus to become a great anything because I just didn't want to always be writing books. I still don't want to always be writing books. And I don't want to always be making pottery either. And so I guess that the hardest work around those impulses is not really having them, but paying attention to them and reminding myself that it's fine to do something else and that I'll still be a quote-unquote poet or a writer or a potter if I spend a couple months doing something completely different.
Kelly, will you read Dream of a Hungry World?
Yes. Dream of a Hungry World. Language rings us at different tones. You can say raiding the commons, but not profit equals destruction. If you want to elicit a brighter color, a pleasing lack of shape. Lots of people write books angry, edit obliviously. A landscape diminishes and becomes your blood. My advice for women is to learn that we are furious. Learn how to get it out. Men grasp and punch, etc. Women feed their loved ones anger. A mistake, a fence line, made jagged as stars still works for now, but learn to return again soon. This is a hungry world full of people who are always in motion, always trying to eat.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a conversation with writer, ceramicist, and visual artist Kelly Sherman, author of The New World. I'm Lauren Korn. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. I love the digestible in these poems, the fruit and the oils, this reference to cake in a later poem. Kelly, what are you hungry for today? Or what have you been hungering for lately?
I feel like at this time, in this version of our world, we are all, it feels to me, so in need of sustenance in so many ways, like interpersonal, spiritual sustenance. I feel like if there's anything that could be a definitional quality of the era of civilization, at least I'll say in the United States, is a desire to encounter something that feels real. And everywhere I look, I see approximations of providing sustenance that don't always actually provide much. And it's funny, this poem, sometimes I look back at poems and I'm like, I don't know how I did this. I don't know who did. And this poem is such a way of talking about looking for something and being willing to take it into you, being willing to put it in the center of your body, being hungry to digest something. And the things that we have to eat are so not filling or fulfilling. I think right now my current crisis, my hunger crisis, is feeling like there is so little in the outside world to sustain me, and coming up with creative ways to fulfill that desire for my thoughts or my body to like knock against something that just makes me feel like, yes, this is it. This feels like encountering a true thread through time or something. And I don't mean to say that there's nothing out there, you know. That's not true. It's not true at all. But I think that there's a lot of emptiness. There's a lot of fluff. And especially if, like me, you were very plugged into a feed of information, that wave of stuff can really feel deadening and overwhelming and not just uninspiring, but like cause despair. And I think that right now I feel so actually full of information or opinions or podcasts. I'm actually not hungry. I need to figure out a way to moderate or fast, to just extend this food metaphor,
yeah.
You know? But how do you do that without feeling like you're completely detaching from the social body? We have this really like polarized sort of like pendulum swing understanding of a lot of different things. Other people would be able to speak to what that is about psychologically, like in our collective psyche. But I feel like I just spent years gorging, and then now my impulse is to completely disappear and detach from all of that. And so finding a way to be intentional with the things that I'm bringing into my body, whether that's like art or news, feels like the most imperative task right now to me.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the boundaries you see between people and how your art kind of navigates those boundaries and crosses between them.
I think about this all the time. And in conversations with other artists, I think this is a fault line that I like find myself on the other side of with some people. Or like my adolescent experience was made exponentially less lonely by the fact that I was able to encounter songs, films, paintings, poems, and books by people. And I really did feel like each of those pieces was like reaching out, you know? And so I'm super aware of what kind of object I'm putting into the world and how it's going to be received when I am making it. And I think it's a really fine line to walk, because we're talking about specialization. On one hand, do I want to make myself happy by creating something and have it be more about coping with the difficulties of being alive through, say, writing poems or drawing comics or making pottery, and having that be the purpose of the art to ground you in the world, which is 100% understandable and okay to do. But then also, as a person who is actively looking for people who can provide examples of like an alternative way of living as an artist, who are producing what I would consider like really charged, inspired, real art, part of consuming that specialized feed art like deeply hurts my feelings. Do you know what I mean? Or it makes me feel alienated in a way that is so unique to the style of world that we live in now. The way that I think about creating art, I guess, and the reason why I think it's so important to be constantly shifting mediums or like approaching what you're creating in a a vital way is keeping yourself alive and grounded, but also being able to know, like, deeply within yourself that if someone buys a mug you made, that you like it and that you are giving something to a person that you yourself feel proud of and excited about. I've certainly made mugs that I didn't like that much and sold them. It doesn't feel good, you know? So I feel like that's kind of the standard by which I really want to, like, be impeccable with the things that are going out from you.
Well, if this book is a representation or this articulation of where you were, which was a dune in California, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is your current poetry trying to articulate?
I'm actually not writing any poems right now, and haven't for a little bit. I am working on a book of nonfiction. In my 20s, I spent many seasons off and on working on cannabis farms in Northern California. And it felt like a huge kind of like crisis era mistake and series of bad decisions at the time. But with the hindsight of age, I'm able to recognize that as simply like a person groping around in the dark of finding their place on earth. So I've been writing essays about that time and trying to think about the intersection of freedom and time and work and money and plants and the earth. And coming from Humboldt County, I've sort of always been a part of this very local conversation of what was going to happen to that whole industry. The place that I grew up was almost entirely subsidized by underground cannabis for decades. Very remote, very rural, and pretty poor. I just find it a really interesting case study, I guess, in the ways in which organic beings, like plants or humans, are unfit or unpredictable within like the market system that demands predictability. So I'm kind of exploring some of those ideas in essay, which feels really clarifying and good after writing a book of poetry.
Kelly, where can listeners find their copy of The New World?
If you are a Missoula local, you can find copies at Fact and Fiction, or you can order them directly from the publisher, Black Ocean, at blackocean.org. And I also have signed copies available on my website at kellysherman.com.
Kelly, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Look for more information about Kelly at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. You've been listening to The Right Question. The show is produced by Peter Hoag and me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Our recording engineer is Beth Ann Austin. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008. And thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.